One. Panther. Play.
All right, One Panther Place podcast. This is a good one here. We are very, very pleased to be joined by the one and only Jim Zocchi. Now, let me tell you something about Jim. He is the only person, to my knowledge, in that organization right now, at least from a broadcast capacity, that has seen every single play from a Carolina Panthers perspective. Jim, how you doing? And is that correct? Am I right on that?
Correct on me. It's correct. Our radio producer, David Langton, is another. Don Toner, who's the equipment manager, is the third one. And we have one more, Dr. Robert Heyer, who's the only other one that this will be his final season. So we're down to three or four of us that have been to every single home and away game for 25 years.
How about that? That is something else, man. I've been following this team since I was a teenager in 95 back there. The Jets game was my first one. Obviously, you were there. The Sam Mills pick, and always been fascinated to talk to you about some of the history, and we'll get to that because there's so much to talk about. Obviously, it's an emotional week in the building with Ron Rivera, his early departure, and it's a 9-year run for Rivera, almost 9 years. Give me your personal feelings on the coach, the man, some of your memories, and then we can get down to the football business after that.
You know, what's great about Ron is that it seems like everybody who covered him, even if it was just like one time, or in our case, at least weekly or twice weekly basis for 9 years, came away with just a great impression of the man. And obviously, he had a winning record. He went to the Super Bowl. He was a two-time coach of the year. So his successes outweighed the disappointments on the field by, 100% across the board in terms of how people felt about, Ron and who he was as a person, with his family and his wife, Stephanie, and just all the community endeavors they were involved with from a charity standpoint, the giving of his time. But whether it was even something big like him showing up or donating or doing something, it was just if someone had an exchange with him, just talking, they came away feeling like they talked to somebody that was just a really true human being. So that's to me is the best thing about Ron is just, a person like that will be successful anywhere he goes in life, and obviously he plans to coach again. But if he got into broadcasting, which he could do, or some other line of work, whatever it is, Ron would be a success in whatever it is picked.
I was curious to find out, and I'd read this a while back, that Ron had actually done some broadcast work in Chicago with WGN, right?
He did, yeah. So he had a period of time after he was a player that he was interested in that. I always thought, from a media standpoint, he was so easy to work with. He just got it. I mean, some coaches, just all they want to do is, look at film and do coaching stuff. But he was very adept at, radio, TV, any of that kind of thing. And when his playing career was done, he did a little bit of some TV work, I think, in Chicago there for a while.
Jim Zocchi joining us, Panthers Radio Network. We are honored to have him here on the One Panther podcast. So let's talk about the football side of this right now. It's obviously a tumultuous time for the Panthers. You're there every day. You're seeing it every Sunday in the booth. In these situations, obviously, they're fairly rare, but it does happen. An interim coach trying to keep things together in that locker room. Tell me about that locker room, though. How did it feel? I'm sure, obviously, it was devastating, but are they holding it together pretty well right now, the glue of that foundation?
I think it is because I was just over there today. Before doing this, I did two podcasts over at the stadium. So I think this is my third podcast after a morning show today. Your dad would be proud of the amount of speaking I'm doing.
Quite the oratory crowd here, yes.
I haven't met your dad yet either, but just from following you, it looks like the long decades run.
Yes.
In Greenville down there. But I would say, to your question, Perry Fuel is so respected in this business and with this team and this group of players. Same with Scott Turner as offensive coordinator. They want to give their very best for those guys to have their opportunities. And you probably at least have seen Perry Fuel in these press conference settings. I mean, he is very organized. He's matter of fact. He's professional, organized. He was asked three different ways about Dante Jackson at the Wednesday press conference, and three different ways he said we'll handle it internally, which is the exact opposite way about Dante Jackson initially handled the question
right.
Opposed to him. So I think he's got that command in that respect. I think he has those traits of being a head coach, and we'll see as they do a wide open search whether that's here or somewhere else. But I think Perry Fuel is a guy that, whether it's at this level, college level, or something, He just seems to carry himself and probably has that ability to be a head football coach.
Jim, what happened to the defense this year? Deep down, what happened?
I've joked that, they do those highlight films at the end of the year, like the 2019 story of the Carolina Panthers. The subtitle would be Run Fitz. The story of the 2019 Carolina Panthers. Run Fitz gave the Panthers fits. They just couldn't get it together. I think they went personnel-wise with trying to correct the big issue of being 27th in the league in quarterback sacks of 2018, and they did it fantastically. As we said, they were second in the league. They were first in the league last week with quarterback sacks. But I think they lost something in translation of being true to your gaps and being in those holes of stopping the run and being able to do both. And you can't just be athletic and go after the quarterback and do swim moves and do stunts and do all these edge rushes. You've got to stop the run first. And some of that might be we just didn't have the right type of, say, middle interior defensive line guys to do that. You know, losing Kaylon Short, we all know, is a big deal. So it began with that. But you need the other players to step up and just hold their spot. Just, you know, be an angle. Yeah. Just, you know, fill your gap. And they get out of position. They overcorrect. They get beat by the offensive linemen. Your teammate gets beat, you go to help them, now your gap is open. But there's like a dozen different things that can go wrong, and we did them all. And as you said, it's been up until this moment as we get ready for Seattle, still a problem with three games to go from week one through week 13. So just I'm sure they'll look at personnel once they figure out who the coach is, what will work best, but they just have not been gaps out. You keep credit to your team for their blocks and their running backs, but it's just a lot of misalignments, bad communication, bad run fits, and it's just been all season long like that.
One player I want to ask you about in particular, and it's actually not Cam Newton yet, so there's a shock. Luke Kuechly, how's he holding up?
Well, I mean, that's that kind of question you might have to ask Luke, but he's professional in every kind of way, and nobody studies harder and works harder, so you have to have work, and I'm sure he's frustrated, for sure. If you asked him, that's going to be an obvious answer. He's a winner. He's a Pro Bowl guy. He's one of the best in the league at what he does. So like everybody in that locker room, I'm sure he's frustrated, but for him in particular, he not only thinks, but performs at a high level. He doesn't just think he can be a great player. He is consistently a great player. He has over 100 tackles already again this year. So I'm sure he's frustrated, and they all thought they'd be better on the defensive side this year than what they turned out to be.
Do you get the sense that Luke in particular is frustrated with the scheme change?
He said from the initial standpoint that to him 3-4-4-3 doesn't matter. He's a football player and a linebacker. Yeah. So I don't know. I think, again, he's one of those guys who tries to, as a captain out there, get everyone else in line. He knows other players' positions and where they should be. And he himself has obviously gotten caught in bad position, been blocked out of place. So it's one of those things. You can't just divide it up into 11 slices and go, if we put this guy here and that guy there, they got to work collectively as a defense, especially talking about front seven versus back four. That front seven's got to work together. So it's almost hard to parcel it out and say, this guy's good, this guy's bad. You can do that to a degree. But really, it is like it's got to come together collectively, and he's just his one out of the 11, one out of the seven up front, and he's going to do what he can do.
Yeah, it takes a village to pull it together. It just seems to me, from watching the film, from a standpoint of frustration, you can just see it in his eyes during these run fits that aren't there, and then the games where they're getting gashed. He works so hard during the week to zone in on these tendencies, and it just doesn't come together. And that's for an elite athlete like Luke. I know that's got to be killing him inside. But I do want to ask you about Cam Newton. I don't imagine you were going to dodge that one. And I think you've been asked about it quite a few times here. But the contributions he has made on and off the field with this organization over the years, and now you find yourself at this crossroads with, you know, a transformational quarterback. I was telling Nick earlier on the podcast, Nick Carboni, this franchise has not seen this kind of crossroads, have they?
Never had a star quarterback before. You know, good quarterback. You know, Jake DeLome was a good quarterback, and he meant a lot to this organization. But we've never had an MVP type quarterback.
Exactly.
A guy that you would talk as far as Hall of Fame credentials. I mean, we've never had that before. And we do have have one, but now we have one that's going to be, you know, turning 31, who's had multiple surgeries and is entering the last year of a contract. So, yeah, we've never had a crossroads at the most important position like we're embarking on right now here.
Yeah, I find it fascinating from that standpoint because you go back and look at the history of what happened with Collins and then to Berline. And then obviously there was a little bit of gap between DeLome and Cam Newton. And those are some of the days you hearken back to when you see what's been going on the last year and a half or so in Carolina. And I try to remind folks that are fairly new to the process, you know, Kyle Allen has played far better than some of the quarterbacks in the past in those bleak years. So my hat's off to Kyle for pulling it together and giving this team some hope when they were 0-2. But how do you feel the coaching decision, as far as who they bring in, will mesh with this decision to whether they keep Cam or not? It's a fascinating conundrum they're in, right?
I think it's it's an interesting spot they're in, and in some ways, it's a good problem to have. I mean, he's an asset, whether he's here or traded, plays 1 year, or just stays long-term. I mean, he's obviously he's an asset, and he's not played his last football, so he's of value. And Kyle Allen, I think, we still don't know what the ceiling is nearly on Kyle Allen. I think he's far exceeded expectations of what you would expect from an undrafted player who barely played in his rookie year to come out and have a quarterback rating to this point of, I think, 83, 84, 16 touchdowns, 12 picks. I mean, he could obviously do better, but you feel like he's playing very solid football, a time was really good football, and then you get the lows that come with the learning process. So I still don't think you quite know what you got in Kyle Allen. But I would say he's definitely in the top 32. There's 32 teams. I would put him as a starting quarterback in this league for somebody, and maybe here. As far as coach, yeah, it entirely depends on. I don't think you try to get a coach that matches what the quarterbacks are here. I think you pick the best coach moving forward for the long term success thereafter here, which will outlast. You would think Cam Newton's career, even that you're looking at making the kind of hire that is a 10, 12, 15 year run when you look at John Fox and Ron Rivera having 9 year runs here. So you want to pick a coach that's going to outlast the quarterback, veteran quarterback you have here right now. But that's to be determined. His health, as you know, is going to determine it. To me, the biggest determinant in all of that is he's got 1 year left on a deal. Mm-hmm. He's got a certain age or a certain number of surgeries. Are you going to commit to, say, 4 or 5 years? Of keep going that direction. Regardless of what you think of Kyle Allen, just taking a look at this age quarterback at this stage of his career, are you willing to do that? And that's what you got to decide, you know, yes or no on that one. And that's the biggest question that's kind of facing them heading into this offseason.
Jim Zocchi, Carolina Panthers Radio Network, joining us. Let's talk about your side of the business a little bit. What a fascinating year with Jordan Gross and Jake DeLome in the booth with you and Mick. How fun has that been, Jim?
It's not just been fun, which it has been fun. You're absolutely right. Both Jake and Jordan are a lot of fun to work with. They're both obviously great at football, but they're great at talking about football, which is what we're doing, right? We're not playing the game. We're talking about it. But they have such a comfortable, easy way, and they blend it right in. There was no practice. There was no, let's bring them in, and let's put a game on the TV and practice. They just sat down and did it. And, of course, for those who've listened for years, you know that Jordan did 2 years on the sideline with us, but had been gone for a couple of years.
Right.
Jake had not worked with us before, but we all knew Jake and worked with Jake as the player that he was. So we knew we were getting quality people, good personalities, great football knowledge. But then there's, you know, the broadcast component to that. And they just jumped in like a favorite pair of jeans, which is as comfortable as could be from day one, where it just, like, there was nothing to really even, like, tips on hardly. And both of them, I mean, it's just, you talk about not only one person, but two individuals both doing it to that level.
Yeah.
And I couldn't have gone any better. We love working with Eugene and with Roman in the past. Oh, yeah. And these guys just carry on that legacy and have been just terrific to work with. I think, and when you listen to the insight they provide, it's just fascinating. And I think for the listeners, it's a real treat to get to hear from them, you guys.
Is that something that the team plans to continue down the road, or is this a one-year deal kind of thing?
You know, nobody has said anything either way. I would believe this is just the way we're going. Mm-hmm. And I would say that both of them really seem to truly enjoy doing it.
Right.
Remember, this is a travel situation to both of them. Jake's in Louisiana, Jordan's in Idaho. Yeah. But I think by splitting it up, it takes that burden of lots and lots of travel and kind of chops it up a little bit, where Jake's doing 10 and Jordan's doing 6 this year. So I think we'll see them back. I haven't heard anything to the contrary. They both really enjoy it, and they both keep up with it when they're not here. You know, they listen to the broadcast. They do the podcast together, the two of them,
yep,
each week. So even though they're not both here every week, they're very much involved in the preparation each week for each game.
What I've always appreciated about the work you and Bill previously and now Mick and a voice like Jake and Jordan, but more so Jake, it's so recognizable. And these moments that are chronicled from you guys that go in the annals of history with the NFL Films packages, I don't think folks appreciate enough the work you guys do. Walking right in like these guys have, I can tell you right now, I've been behind a mic before. My first job was 18 years old, WCCP in Clemson, doing a morning show. And I almost vomited before I cracked that first mic. I'm telling you, it's nerve-wracking, maybe more so than being a quarterback. And I admire the work they've done. Jake just sounds great. It's almost like listening to Romo. It's a treat to listen to.
Yeah, and you know, one thing Jake doesn't do, which he can do, is he doesn't do the prediction game thing because,
yeah,
you know, he said, it's like, that's not what I want to do. I'd rather explain what's going on. And obviously, he gives nuances as they're set up, the things they expect and look for, and from time to time. But he doesn't just, you know, every time they line up, say, this is going to be a run play. It's not
just, yeah, you don't need that.
I'm a Romo fan, too. That I'm saying is that that quarterback perspective that they see so much on the field, and Jordan does, too. They both do just a great job.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah. Again, it's just that balance of knowing enough of what to say. Without, again, there's an art to not talk on radio, not TV. You can't see it, unlike, you know, Tony Romo. Sure. He can talk over play. You know, they got to know when to stop talking, let Mick call the play.
Yeah.
If I'm talking, we kind of, you know, not step on each other. And that's been what's been amazingly, you know, seamless from day one with both those guys.
Hats off to those guys and to you and Mick as well. It's been a treat to listen to you guys over the years, as well as Bill Rosinski, who obviously still works for Compass Media. Jim, a couple more questions here before we let you go. Of course, it's Jim Zocchi, Carolina Panthers Radio Network. He has a host of other things that are going on as well, podcasts, radio responsibilities. Head coaching candidates. Now, again, it's hard to say right now. It's an early start on the college search because you let go Rivera early on. Does the name like Jim Harbaugh give you any sort of any vibes at all? Or are you looking more for like a younger assistant? Where do you feel like they may go?
You know, I don't know. I think they need to get into the search process to even know for themselves what that answer is. Because as I say it from the standpoint, when you get in and talk to people, you're going to be impressed. For example, Perry Fuel doesn't fit anything that have been kind of been the broad strokes of what have been said. He basically is Ron Rivera. He's defensive minded, long time in this league, more true to his football experiences and say analytics, that kind of thing. But they think very highly of Perry Fuel. They're giving him a genuine look these last four games to show what he could do as a head coach, because you can always complement that on the offensive side with a coordinator that brings some of the young analytics and that kind of thing. But again, just hearing what we've all heard together collectively, I would lean more towards somebody with definitely pro experience as opposed to a straight up college coach, like, for example, Urban Meyer, Lincoln, Riley. And again, reserve the right to be wrong. If they interview someone like that, they get blown away. They can go, you know what, we started the process thinking this was a guy, but we found this individual that we think can bring it all together. So I think they're open to being wooed, you know, being talked to, being talked into something that maybe they're not thinking right now. So I think it's wide open. It'll be a wide open search. I'll just throw this out there. Tom Glick and Dave Tepper did not know each other when that process began for team president, which is a different kind of a role, obviously.
Hmm.
But it just goes to show, it doesn't necessarily have to be,
wow,
I worked with this guy before, I know this guy. That was a wide open search for team president in the case of Tom Glick that has worked out really well, obviously.
Yeah, that's an interesting nugget. I did not know that. And that's quite the change from the previous administration, where it was very much friendship and relationship based. Tepper definitely strikes me as somebody who is trying to make this thing work at a high level, and he's got a lot of things going on right now. How do you assess his performance so far on the business side and now on the football side? Obviously, you work with the organization there, and I know there's limitations to what you can talk about, but how is it working for him? What is he like?
he moves at the speed of light. But it's like, you know, what you're seeing is they do their research, they plan it out, they meet. What people didn't see last year was how much traveling Tom Glick and a lot of the staff did, and Dave Tepper, in looking at facilities and, you know, drawing from looking at different football operations, basketball operations, and draw from what are the best things that work with something like a facility, like what they're getting ready to, to build down in Rock Hill. Same with the preparation for soccer, just the amount of research to analytics that go into, is this even something we should do? Is this a moneymaker? Is this a good league to be involved with MLS soccer, which we can all see is about ready to happen at any moment. So it's quick in our eyes because we don't see all the behind-the-scenes stuff, but it's well thought out, it's well researched, travel to in person, you know, feel, touch it, all that stuff, break it down, and then go for it. And we're looking at everything from what's going on within the Bank of America Stadium to what's happening in Rock Hill to soccer to whatever that future Panther Stadium's going to look like. And he's got that 10-year frame where he said he wants something different than what they got right now for the football team. But he is moving fast and making money and doing what he's always done. But he's bringing it to the world of sports right now.
Yeah. Well, hopefully the wins will follow because it's hard when you come in and then things are not as you want them, and it takes time, and it's not a slam dunk when you buy a team to hire the right staff. In fact, recently it hasn't gone so well with other owners, but I get a sense that this owner has a different approach than others have, and hopefully they do this right this go round. Hey, I want to ask you a quick little nostalgia question. We'll let you go here, Jim. I've got a favorite, personal favorite of mine, a game I was at in that stadium, Bank of America Stadium. I'll tell you mine. You tell me yours. That Super Bowl might have been yours. I had the Philly title game. There are a lot of things you could choose from. What was your best moment in that stadium working in the capacity you work in?
Well, it's not his favorite game. It's always going to be the game in St. Louis, the double overtime playoff game. He got a sudden death, and Achievement was a huge underdog. I haven't explained it to people that weren't old enough to appreciate it at the time. What a huge favorite the Rams and that greatest show on turf were.
Yes.
You know, on the road, we were definitely double-digit underdogs.
Yeah.
There was 12, 13.
I think you're right, yeah.
It was ridiculous. As on top of that, to be a walk-off, double overtime win with Steve Smith of all people, you know, taking it home on a 69-yard touchdown. I mean, it's just like that game, for what it meant and the drama, just had so many layers to unpack. You could spend a season of documentaries just on that one game. That's the biggest one. Great moments. It's like you tend to remember, like, you've got kids, right? So when they're little, you remember all that, like, first steps and all that, the first time they talk and all that stuff.
Yeah.
When Chad Cota intercepted that pass against Pittsburgh.
Oh, yes.
We knew that clinched the playoff. It clinched the division.
Yeah.
96, and we end up making it all the way to the NFC title game. Again, to explain to people, second year in the league.
Right.
And they go they go as far as they go. I mean, 7-9 was a huge surprise. You said you're at that Jets game. We're 0-5.
0-5 going in.
First year.
Right.
Rally to go 7-9 as an expansion team.
Yeah.
So to go in that second year and go all the way to the NFC title game, but that win to take a have a what was Erickson Stadium moment.
Erickson Stadium.
just to have that happen in the thunderous ovation from the crowd. It's almost like a disbelief. Like, are we really seeing a team this young just, like, showing the league how it's done?
Oh, my goodness.
As we found out, short run.
Well,
4 years in, Dave Capers is out 2 years later. He's gone after that. But that was just a magical ride that nobody could have seen coming. And kind of, to me, as far as that feeling, that, and then following it up with a home playoff game with Dallas, those kind of things going on, that was just surreal in a way that they could accomplish that in such a short period of time.
Good call. Dakota, our first article we penned for One Panther Place was a sort of a homage to that game, the oral history of the game, basically. That game meant so much to me as a teenager growing up playing football in high school. It captured the essence of everything that team was about that year, the heart, you know, being the underdog, and then you got Bill Cowher, Steelers coming in, Cordell Stewart's long run, the hit that Sam Mills puts on Cordell, the goal line stand. It's just great stuff. I tell you, my personal favorite, and it doesn't get mentioned a lot, but there's a game in 2003 where the big bad Buccaneers came to town, November of 2003. And the game was back and forth. Prohl caught the touchdown. The Bucs stormed back in the fourth quarter. And then the two-minute drive that Jake had where he found, I think, four different receivers, and then the bobbled catch to Smith on the slant route there. That, to me, just everything about that day, the cool air, the shadows in the stadium, the defending world champs, you're on your way to a division title officially at that point after the long layoff. That was the ultimate cardiac Cats game, I think. And I went to all the games that year. That one still stands out to me as the most special, and it brings back so many great memories.
That's a great one, and I'm trying to remember the exact year. Whatever John Gruden's final year was at Tampa Bay, we had that primetime game against them. They came in. They were
9-3. Yes.
Panthers beat them. He went on a season-long, month-long, I should say, losing streak. They finished 9-6. He got fired.
I remember this. Yep.
John Gruden's tenure with Tampa Bay essentially came to, remember, he won a Super Bowl, came to an end. Because of the fact that the Panthers were able to win that game, and they just never recovered from that the rest of the way.
2008, yep, and Gruden did lose out, and they absolutely fired him after that. In fact, Carolina has been responsible for several firings. Both Moras were fired after Carolina games, and that was the second Mora was after Carolina, I think, passed the ball three times where they ran the Wildcat down the Georgia Dome, and then, the Diddley Poo game where he's Mora Sr.'s losing it. Back in 96, I think that was. Yeah, it's fascinating. And I think that's what this team needs to get back to, is dominating within the division. They just don't seem to have it right now. But hopefully the new guy on the horizon and the new team on the horizon will get that done. Jim, this has been great, man. I thank you so much for your time. Jim Zocchi, Panthers Radio Network. I've been wanting to talk to this guy for years. He's a personal hero of mine from the broadcasting business.
Sounds good, John. And I don't know where you get all this video from, but I was a big fan on Twitter of following all the archive stuff you put out there. I'll see players respond sometimes and go, where did you find that one? And they're seeing themselves in these archives that you dig up. But
you let your friends know they're inside the building. I am for hire, but it's a treat. We've captured a lot of stuff over the years, and we just like to share it with the fans. And what we do at One Panther Place, it ain't for profit, man. It's a labor of love. We just like to be the voice of the fans. So we'd love to hook up sometime, man. I appreciate you making some time for us, Jim.
All right, John. Appreciate it. Thank you.
One Panther Podcast. John Ellis.